2015. That's our noon hour look at WILL News. Our next report this afternoon at 4:30 during All Things Considered.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming the Mark Morris Dance Group for two performances on March 14th and 15th. More information is available at KrannertCenter.com or 217-333-6280.
Twelve thirty-eight, 68 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, and the unseasonably warm weather will continue for a while. Most of the Midwest will remain warm and dry through tomorrow morning. We'll see our next chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow night into Thursday. Temperatures will remain well above average for mid-March. Many locations will see temperatures in the 70s to near 80 degrees through the weekend. High temperatures today will range from the upper 50s across northeastern Wisconsin to the upper 70s across Missouri, southern Illinois, and southwestern portions of Iowa and Kentucky. Low temperatures tonight will range from the low 40s across northern Wisconsin to the upper 40s across southern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, sunny with a high of 73, the wind light and from the west. Tonight, mostly clear, the low 55, the wind will be out of the south from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny, look for a high in the upper 70s, the wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, expect a low of 57 with the wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Storms look for a high in the mid-70s. The wind out of the southwest from 10 to 15. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low in the upper 50s. At noon central time, temperatures across the two states ranged from the low 60s to the low 70s. Sunshine was abundant. In Rockford, 63 degrees. Also 63 at O'Hare. Bloomington reported 64 degrees. It was 69 at Mattoon, 73 at Carbondale. 61 at South Bend. Lafayette reported 67 degrees. It was 68 at Indy and 71 degrees at Terre Haute. Willard Airport reported 69 degrees at the top of the hour. The dew point, 50. The relative humidity, 50%. The wind out of the southwest at 6. The barometric pressure, 30.11 and falling. And at 1240, 68 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is sunny. Thanks to high commodity prices and surging productivity, U.S. farmers earned a net income of nearly $98 billion last year, a record, according to the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Those strong earnings are helping boost the demand for farmland. In the past year, even as most Americans struggled with falling home prices, farmers saw spikes in the price of land used for agriculture. Frank Morris of member station KCUR has more.
Across the plains, farmers are gearing up for spring planting. Farm stores are humming.
Thanks, okay. Bill.
At the Farmers Co-op in Spring Hill, Kansas, a steady stream of men in hard-worn canvas jackets line up to buy fertilizer. Rita Cooper says her customers are investing heavily in next fall's harvest.
They are going ahead and, you know, committing to the dollars, committing to the orders, planting, getting it into the ground, and yes, they are doing that extra above and beyond to get the crop.
Wasn't always this way. In the 1980s, tens of thousands of farmers went broke and were forced off their land. Huge farm aid concerts raised money to help some hang on. Brutal, hard times and foreclosures went on for years. But Jason Henderson, who runs the Omaha branch of the Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank, says all that's changed now.
Over the last 2-3 years, the U.S. farm sector has been enjoying banner farm incomes. It's been a real boom time.
Farm income has shot up almost 30% each of the last 2 years. Chad Hart at the University of Iowa says both prices and production are high.
As we look at the 2011 corn and soybean crops in this country, they're probably the most valuable crops we've ever produced.
The corn crop alone is worth well over $76 billion. Two major factors drive demand. Exports have surged to new record levels. China is the top importer. Domestic consumption is up too, fueled by a huge rise in ethanol production. It adds up to high prices and happy farmers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, can't complain. Prices have been real good. Crops ain't been bad either.
Smile lines plow deep into Rick Kroll's face. He's here at the Western Farm Show in Kansas City, where farmers and their whole families check out the latest tractors and farm implements. Thanks in part to these enormous and incredibly precise machines, modern farmers can work much more land and get two or three times more grain off each bit of it than their fathers did. When farmers have money, they tend to buy one of two things, land or equipment, and prices for both have shot up dramatically. Kroll is eyeing a $200,000 tractor, while some of his younger relations climb on it.
Hey, Danny, my birthday's Tuesday.
Buy it?
Yeah, just go ahead and buy it for me. Feel free.
Kroll's joking, but many larger-scale farmers, like Paul Vaver from Nebraska, are feeling pretty free these past few years.
Yeah, I bought a combine and a couple John Deere tractors, yeah. Yeah, gets up there pretty expensive, you know.
A couple of big tractors and a combine could run you well over $1 million and take months to deliver. Ernie Vietze, who, like many men here, sports a John Deere shirt and a serious mustache, sells equipment as fast as he can get it.
The company is making machines practically as fast as they can make them.
Farm equipment factories are producing jobs twice as fast as the rest of the manufacturing sector. All that new equipment flooding into the market presents another opportunity for guys like Manny De La Fuente.
You end up with all this used machinery, and you got to have a place to put it. So overseas is hungry for this equipment.
De La Fuente is the export manager for Aaron's Brothers. The company regularly ships trade-in tractors and combines from Illinois to Africa, the former Soviet bloc countries, and Latin America. He says his exports have jumped 50% in 2 years.
Business is up. So 2011 was good, and 2012 is going to be even better.
The forecast for agriculture as a whole is not quite as rosy. Back at the farm show, John Minow just bought a used combine, but sees leaner times coming.
No, I think it's a cycle. I think we'll see some tough years ahead. So hang on, have a few good years, and get ready for something else.
Economists say the boom in agriculture may have hit its peak. They predict farm incomes will fall slightly this year, but remain close to historic highs. For NPR News, I'm Frank Morris in Kansas City.
The 13th Judicial Circuit covers McLean, Ford, Livingston, Logan, and Woodford counties in central Illinois. The Republican primary for judge in the circuit pits an entrenched public figure in the legal community against a former prosecutor and current defense attorney. Illinois Public Radio's Willis Kern reports.
The candidates seeking the Republican nomination for circuit judge in Illinois' 11th Circuit are both McLean County natives and, of course, attorneys. But that's about where the similarities end. Paul Lawrence comes from a family of lawyers well entrenched in McLean County's legal scene. Chris Graham turned to law after working as an interpreter in Japan for Mitsubishi. Graham has served as both a prosecutor and defense attorney, and he touts his highly conservative views and unabashedly points to his political activity when greeting voters.
When they find out that, oh, you know, Chris Graham has been vice chairman of the McLean County Republican Party, for example, or Chris Graham has done both prosecution and defense of cases, for example. I mean, I think that those are interesting things.
Lawrence was appointed to the seat vacated when Michael Prowl retired last year. He's been a judge for 10 years, although he's never run for judge or any office. He says voters don't really care about a judge's political views.
I certainly have not advertised myself as having conservative views or moderate views or liberal views. I don't think that is an important factor when you're looking at a judge. I think when you're looking at a judge, you need to find a judge who is going to follow the law, and that's what I've been doing.
While Graham says he ran for Bloomington City Council 9 years ago and lost in a four-way race, Lawrence is a complete political newcomer, admits he's not comfortable in campaign mode. Political influence in judicial elections is on the upswing nationwide and in Illinois. A recent state Supreme Court race drew national attention for its multi-million-dollar campaign contributions. Chris Graham has aligned himself with the County Republican Party, but he'd only received a few modest individual contributions from people associated with the party as of a few weeks to go in the race. ISU judicial scholar Bob Bradley says Graham's ideological leanings don't do the process any favors.
You should judge what the arguments are, what the facts are, and you shouldn't be looking at that from a conservative or liberal lens, because that means you're bringing an element of partiality into that that is not supposed to be there.
Bradley says Graham is drawing a distinction between himself and Lawrence. That's difficult in a judicial campaign where voters, even in higher profile races, have little knowledge about candidates. Surface issues tend to center on civic involvement and not much else. One reliable tool voters have is the ratings given to judicial candidates by the Bar Association. Lawrence proudly touts his 95.1% approval given by lawyers in McLean County, while Graham's 25% rating leaves him in the not recommended column. Graham brushes that off as insignificant, saying attorneys tend to reject his ultra-conservative views, and that doesn't mirror the feelings of voters in McLean County or Logan, Livingston, Woodford, or Ford counties that comprise the circuit. There's also one below-the-surface issue that neither candidate likes to discuss. Late last year, an organization representing companies that get sued moved McLean County off a watch list to number 8 nationally in its ranking of so-called judicial hellholes. The American Tort Reform Association defines a judicial hellhole as a place where civil judges systematically apply laws and court procedures in an unfair and unbalanced manner, usually against companies that are defendants in civil lawsuits. Madison and St. Clair counties in southern Illinois are ranked 5th nationally, in part, says the association, because only about 1 in 10 asbestos cases tried there had any connection to the area. Asbestos cases are also at the heart of McLean County's judicial hellhole status. Travis Aiken is executive director of the Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch. He says the main problem in McLean County is the conspiratorial nature of the cases being judged for the plaintiffs.
Companies that did not have a direct impact on exposing someone to asbestos and getting them sick are being held accountable through the idea, the civil conspiracy idea, that these companies supposedly colluded to withhold evidence of the harmful effects of asbestos.
Aiken says the problem isn't the volume of cases in McLean County, but the out-of-balance size of the monetary judgments. Illinois Abuse Watch notes one jury verdict alone totaled more than $90 million last year. Despite the judicial hellhole designation, none of the judgments in McLean County asbestos cases had been vacated or overturned until a month ago, when appellate justices vacated two verdicts, one of them a $4 million judgment in a directed verdict case presided over by Judge Paul Lawrence. He directed the verdict after Honeywell refused to comply with an order to produce a former employee as a trial witness. A product safety consultant, Aiken says, had previously testified in 22 other McLean County cases. Lawrence disagrees with the judicial hellhole label and says lawyers in the county can attest to judicial fairness. Asked whether or not there are problems with asbestos cases being tried in McLean County, Graham says his work now is primarily in criminal cases, so he can't offer an opinion on the civil suits. As to his chances of defeating a sitting, although appointed, circuit court judge, Graham says it happened 10 years ago in McLean County and could happen again. I'm Willis Kern.
Matt Getten and David Gill are running in the Illinois Democratic primary for Congress in Illinois' new 13th District. On Wednesday night, the two candidates meet in a live debate. I'm Jim Meadows. Join me as the candidates answer questions from a panel of reporters. The 13th Congressional District Democratic Debate, Wednesday night at 7 on WILL-TV, AM 580, and will.illinois.edu.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 13th of March, 2012. It was on this day, 2003, the journal Nature reported the discovery of 350,000-year-old fossilized human footprints in Italy, the oldest known human footprints, about 8 inches long, 4 inches wide. Their maker is probably about 5 feet tall. 1997, on this date, thousands of people reported mysterious lights over Arizona. including a V-shaped object with six lights on its leading edge. One cement truck driver reported that the lights hovered over Phoenix for more than 2 hours. It's the birthday of Janet Flanner, born Indianapolis, 1892, who became friends with Harold Ross's wife, Jane Grant, and thereby became Paris correspondent for Mr. Ross's magazine, The New Yorker. Her Letters from Paris column ran for 50 years, from 1925 to 1975. She once said that of all the work she did for the magazine, she was most proud of her piece in 1936 on Hitler. In her profile, she wrote, "He regards liberalism as a form of tyranny, hatred and attack as part of man's civic virtues, and equality of men as immoral and against nature. He has a fine library of 6,000 volumes, yet he never reads. Books would do him no good. His mind is made up." Here's a poem for today by Alden Nowlin, entitled Full Circle. "In my youth, no one spoke of love where I lived, except I spoke of it, and then only in the dark. The word was known like the name